I'm here this afternoon with Francois. Is that France? How do you like to be called?
Francois, yeah, that's it.
Albanese, yeah. Who served with my uncle at Saipan, and later he served on Okinawa. We were just talking a little bit about some background, and he was beginning to tell me a little bit about Sergeant Tommy Baker, who he had served with from Fort McClellan days on up through Saipan. So would you go ahead, please, and just tell me what you remember about him?
Baker, I know, was was always getting into trouble somewhere. He was a good soldier, and like a lot of the soldiers, they do the job. They didn't like the basic training or the hanging around. But when in combat, they did everything they had to do and then some. In fact, when I had command of D Company, I had a policy. As soon as we came out of combat, I'd bust at least three or four sergeants down to privates because they were no damn good as sergeants in the training area or the back area. They were always getting into trouble. As soon as I got back into combat, I'd make them again. And they'd take over, and they'd be perfectly happy.
And he was one of those leaders. He was one of those types.
Yeah, he was one of those types. Yeah, and I know it. I mean, after you live with these troops, as long as we did, and got to understand them, and you had their respect because you understood them. You knew them well. You knew who was good and who wasn't, and who you could depend on. But you had to depend on the non-cons to follow your orders. And most of the guys that we had were top-notch. They did the job. Yeah, as long as you led them.
Yeah. Could you describe the relationship between Colonel O'Brien and Sergeant Baker? I've been told by some other people that it was a very close type of relationship.
Well, I wasn't in A Company, I was in B Company.
Right.
But I think he was from the Old National Guard. He came down with Captain O'Brien.
That's right.
And they all stuck together. Mm-hmm. I ran into that problem in B Company because all the NCOs were close with the company commander. We were the outsiders.
Mm-hmm.
But in the final analysis, when we went to combat, we were the ones that took the outfit, both the draftees and the National Guard people, into combat.
Mm-hmm.
Not Hennessy or not any of the company commanders. The only one that I know of, there was a C Company commander, I think it's McLinn, I think his name was, I'm not sure, and O'Brien, and that was about all that went in.
Mm-hmm.
Hennessy, B Company commander, D Company commander, Wally Vanier.
Yeah.
They went back.
They went back.
They went back. They didn't go with us.
So that would be.
I can tell you who the heck went in. Yeah. You get the 1st Battalion and.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Here we are. O'Brien, of course, was with us. This guy got banged up.
In an
automobile accident. Whalen. Ackerman was out of the 107th.
Mm-hmm.
He took the company in. He was out, this fella here, Coker. He was out. Hennessy was out. McCarthy, he went with us.
He went over to 2nd Battalion, didn't he?
Yeah. I became the Battalion 4, and Huey King stayed with the company, but he was killed on Saipan.
Right.
C Company. What did you What did you ever hear about C Company? Anything?
Well, let's see.
Schmidt went up the regiment, and he was the company commander of C.
Yeah.
McGlynn. McGlynn, Ward was killed. He was out of the 7th. He was killed.
Ward, yeah.
Ward, Bill Ward. McGlynn got the company, and he lost it in Saipan.
What do you mean he lost it?
Well, O'Brien...
Oh, he lost the company, yeah.
Yeah, did you know about that?
No.
Well, I don't know whether I want to make that a... He never would go up front, you know, he always stayed in the CP. And O'Brien, they were in the lead, and O'Brien went up there and found him sitting in the CP. What the hell's going on in the company? Yeah. Why aren't they moving or something? And he would rely on the platoon leaders and all that. So O'Brien knew what the hell to do. He relieved him.
Mm. So Tugaw took over. He's not. I don't know if he's in there.
No, he's not in there. He came later on.
Yeah.
Catlin by that time was up on his three.
S3, yeah.
Yeah. And C4 and the D Company. D Company. Veneer went back.
Mm-hmm.
Dolan was gone.
Dolan went up on regimental staff.
Yeah, Dolan did. Kenneth Dolan, yeah. Kennedy, Dudley Kennedy, he was out of the company. Van Valkenburg, he was out of the company. I don't know what happened to him. Butkus was the exec of the battalion.
Yeah.
And Hardy, he was sent someplace. So, I got the company, and I had all new officers.
On Okinawa, yeah.
Yeah. But let me see, how about the headquarters? Take a look at the headquarters here. So check that out. It's this outfit here. No, that's service company. Where the hell is it? Oh, headquarters are in the back.
What?
I think, no?
Well, if you want. I think the headquarters would be the staff, wouldn't that be the...
Yeah, the staff and the, head AR, yeah. He went someplace.
That's
Chatfield.
Chatfield. Yeah.
Yeah. Harry Huggins was in the headquarters, but then he went up with O'Brien and became the ammo officer, I think. Hopkins took the battalion to Saipan, and later on, he got up on staff. So, well, these are the second battalion, Catlin's headquarters, second battalion, Catlin was in at that time. Jameson and Ryan, these are third battalion. But these guys never took the company in, took the battalion. The only one that went in into combat was Hopkins, but he was up on staff. I think he was exec. Mm-hmm. He became the exec. But as I say, nobody knew O'Brien that well, other than the company he came down with. And we got to know him, sure, because we were officers and we lived in the same row and right. We see him and all. Yeah. But I liked him because he was fairly decent to the officers.
Mm-hmm.
And a likable guy, he had a sense of humor, and you could have a lot of fun with him.
Yeah.
But he was tough.
Yeah.
This guy was a good guy in many ways, but he was hard as nails. And can you imagine how I felt when I reported down there? I went to the division that was at night. I went to the division and walked in and reported to the adjutant, who was a guy by the name of Bidwell.
Yeah.
He came out at 107th. And he looked at me and he says, Albanese, you're going to be company and you've got two strikes against you. So I said to him, sir, why? He says, well, they don't want you. I said, well, why am I going? He says, because they needed officers and they didn't make plans fast enough to make their own sergeants, second lieutenants. So the Washington decided to fill them up with what officers they had, mm-hmm. which was you people. So the 107 had a couple of hundred of them, officers that were, had, I went to OCS school in 38, 39.
Yeah. They had that, they had the OCS program.
Program.
Based on the Fort Benning.
Fort Benning, it was equivalent to what you'd call a 10 series.
Yeah.
That you got in college.
Right.
Except that it was a little tougher. We had to do it on our own. Like I drilled on Wednesday. Headquarters night was Thursday, Friday night was school.
Yeah.
And I got paid $1 for drilling on Wednesday. I got nothing for Thursday, headquarters night, and I got nothing for the school. You do it on your own. It took about almost a year, not quite a year. And you pass everything, the officers gave the instructions, and you each had a turn at the commanding the school, falling it in, inspecting with the inspecting officer, the commandant of the school, marching to the class, turning them over to the instructor, taking a break, getting them back into the thing, and marching them back down on the floor and dismissing them. And you were graded on that. And when I got it, I was commissioned as of 1939, but not active. In other words, I had it,
mm-hmm.
and I could wear a little gold bar on my gray fatigue uniform, and I also could wear a diamond on my epaulette on my OD uniform, which denoted that I was a reserve officer. And the only good thing about it was when you went up in rank, from in the NCO rank, you presented yourself to the board, and they saw that you had your commission, and that's all you had to do. You were never questioned about anything,
mm-hmm.
because you've already been through it, through the school. So when Colonel Tobin got us all together in September of 1940, he said, look, he stood on the back of a 2.5-ton truck on the dirt floor, and all of us were standing in front of him. He said, look, gentlemen, he said, I'd love to take all of you with me, but I'm not going to be able to do that. You didn't, you weren't picked to fill slots in any aircraft. That's all been done. I can take some of you down, but he said, I would advise you to apply for a slot in the 27th Division because they need officers. They haven't got them. And they're not going to be able to get them right away. And he put it, we did that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of us did that. Two of my buddies that were killed, we all went in.
Who's that? Who's the buddy?
Well,
they're different outfits?
Well, they didn't, one of them, Roger Pear, was a guy out of
right.
I Company. He went with the 3rd Battalion of the 105th.
Right.
And Bill Baxter went with the MPs, 27 MPs. And he got kicked in the groin, which caused him to get cancer.
Oh, dear.
And it was malignant. It killed him. Both Roger and I went down to see him get on the ship and go back to the States. And then he went down to Staten Island, I think. His wife was a nurse. And she used to dope him up and just to, so he wouldn't have so much pain, but he finally died. But that was a shame. And Roger, after I got hit on Saipan, I come out, I went up to see Roger, and maybe 20 minutes before I I got there, he had been hit by a sniper and fell off the cliff down into the valley. And if the fall didn't kill him, the bullet did.
Yeah, I've read an account of that. Yeah.
And he was they were the two guys who went with me. Mm-hmm. The others, John Blue, came out of service company. He had a commission. And Harry Huggins came out of 1st Battalion headquarters, I think it was. He was in. They went to the 105th with me, too. And they stayed and came back and went into the regiment after the war, like I did.
Mm-hmm.
And Huggins is dead, and Blue is dead now. Blue commanded the regiment after the war in about around 1960. And
you're talking about the 7th now?
Yeah. I was supposed to get it after him. And I was the battalion commander and senior, and went to the Command General Staff College and all. And we went up and saw O'Hara, and he didn't see any reason why I shouldn't get it. And General Forey had other ideas. He had his own, he was head of the 69th at one time, then he became the general of the 42nd Division. And he had some debts to pay.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted another guy in there. So he was the commanding general. And O'Hara was the commander of the National Guard in New York State. But it wasn't O'Hara, it was the next guy. I can't think
of it. Not Baker?
No, not Baker, no. Baker I knew well. In fact, I went to Baker and I said, for crying out loud, I said, oh, you want combat people, you want somebody commanding these units that has been through it. I said, why the hell is this happening? He says, Mike, you can't do a thing about it. He says, Forey commands the division. And Forey and I got along fine with Forey. But he had obligated, he owed this guy.
Yeah.
So, I stayed another year until I had to get out. I was 60. I got out. Mm-hmm. I put 31 years. I went out top drawer.
Yeah.
My God, they had a review, a dinner. I got promoted to full colonel. Mm-hmm. And the whole schmear. But I would have loved to have commanded the outfit I started out.
Sure.
And I got that close to it, but it didn't happen. But to get back to O'Brien, as I say, we didn't really, you know, I knew him as a company commander, you know, and he was always nice to me. I liked the man, and I don't think he disliked me in any way. We got along good, and he knew pretty much that I was getting beat up, but I'm a tough little guy, and I said, this guy's not going to beat me into the ground. And I would study at night. In fact, I did everything just so I'd be right. Mm-hmm. Anything I didn't know, I'd find out about it. And he never wanted me to leave. I mean, O'Brien finally got me as the S4 temporarily. I was still attached to B Company for a couple of months, and finally, when things I guess were starting to come to a head, Hennessy had to release me.
Well, then
he was
the
nicest
about?
Guy. Let me see. That had to be in '42 in the Hawaiian Islands, up at Schofield Barracks.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what you got made as Battalion S4.
Yeah, I became Battalion S4. And, you know, one thing I liked about O'Brien, he He was a very sharp guy in studying people. And he knew that I could do the job. But he never told you how to do it. He didn't try to jam anything down.
Yeah.
Down your throat. I kept him informed, and I could never, ever go up to him in the whole time we were in combat and say, I couldn't get any ammunition. I'd steal it. I'd do anything. And I never failed. I mean, I was up there every time, on time. Once I was late. And he was a little upset about that. And I said, wait a minute. You think you're the only one fighting? I said, I had a fight to get up here. But it would so happen that one of the other regiments couldn't jump off on time. So I had time enough to get the rations out, get ammunition out and everything, and he was perfectly happy. But what he would do with me, a lot of times he'd say, come on, Albie, we'll go up and see A Company. We jump on the back of a tank, and we go up to A Company. And what he was doing was, he was getting me closer to combat all the time, or closer to the companies and all, in the event that he'd have to use me. I realized that after a while. And then this one time I went up with him on the tank, and I'd wander around, I'd check the men, and I always carried extra socks in my pocket. And I'd see some guy say, have his shoes with him. I'd say, how the hell are you walking those damn socks? Take them off. Here's a pair of mine. Oh, no, I don't want no, Lieutenant. Take it, I said, I can get them quicker than you. I'm the guy that gets them.
Yeah.
And I'd give him a pair or two. And and make them throw the other ones away. Because feet were important. I got the, that's what we were able to move on. And I came back from walking around the company and seeing the platoon leaders and the men and all, and going up on the line and taking a look and firing a couple of shots. And I come back, OB gone. I said, son of a bitch, what, he left me up here? So what I did was I told Ackerman, and I said, you get some rest. I can sleep anytime after I get everything up to you people, I'm free. So I said, go ahead, I'll man the CP. And I manned the CP the whole night while they got some rest. Mm. And I got on a pipe to him, I said, hey, the hell are you trying to do? Get me killed up here?
Mm-hmm.
He said, ah, I'll do you good. See how you gotta have. I said, okay, you win. So I knew he wasn't coming up for me. So I stayed there. But he, as I say, he and I got along very well. I'd see him after I completed the battalion, gave out the rations, gave out ammunition, gave out any socks, changed weapons. If a guy had a cracked stock, get him another one that we had on the truck, and they give it to him, take that one. Get firing pins, barrels for the machine guns, anything that was needed. After a while, you know what you need. And initially, my truck with everything loaded with ammunition and was 89th priority off the ship. When we hit the beach, we went into combat. We went through the Marines that were laying there. There were hundreds of them wounded and laying there, and that was our first sight of combat. Mm-hmm. And all I saw was wounded Marines and dead Marines. And they went right up to the city of airfield. And I knew that the ammunition was going to be used up very fast because it was their first combat, and none of these soldiers were going to just shoot one shot. They were shooting. They were going through ammo like. And the only way we could cope with that was everybody that got off that ship carried in a cloverleaf of 60 millimeter mortar, a box or two of machine gun ammunition, maybe 5 or 6 bandoliers of ammunition, a sack full of hand grenades, and they dumped them on the beach in front of my S4 section, right there. They wouldn't take them with them, they dumped them right there. And if some guy wanted a bandolier, that was all right, but the bulk of it was there. So I had a nice pile, and thank God I had. Mm-hmm. Because when that ran down, I had to try to get ammunition out of the Marines, and they didn't want to part with any. Mm-hmm. And it was tough. And because the division hadn't set up yet. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were the first in. They hadn't even set up yet and got their stuff off. And that's when we found this truck, this Sharp truck.
Yeah, I want you to, I remember that, and I'm not sure I got that straight, but why don't you go ahead and tell it to me again.
All right. One of my mechanics that I had with me, says, there's a Jack truck over there in the woods. I said, Jesus, let's see if we can get it. Because I was desperate. I said, well, how the hell am I going to be able to get ammunition up to these people? I mean, we could carry it up, but we couldn't handle it fast enough. So they tried starting it. The battery was good, wouldn't start. So the mechanic, and I'm thinking Rattigan, I think his name was, it's not Rattigan, I can't think of it. Anyway, he starts looking at it, and he looked at the motor and all. Then he pulled his seat up, and the dumb japs had the gas line coming from the tank underneath. Tank was full. Gas line underneath coming up and going under the seat. And the bouncing of the seat
just
broke the copper tubing. He says, there it is. Takes a windshield wiper tubing, cuts a piece off it, puts it on, pumps the gas. We got us a truck. Mm-hmm. Oh man, was that good. They tried, everybody tried to get it, the division one. I stood on a running board with the MP, two MPs and a lieutenant.
Would you buy some orange juice?
Ah, thank you, that was lovely, yeah.
Because
he's doing all the talking.
He hasn't had any lunch and he gets,
just fine.
He passes out.
And I told him, I took my 45 and says, I'm not going to give up this truck if I had to shoot you.
Yeah.
You're not getting it. I said, I got a battalion commander and I got a battalion up there. And if you think I'm going to go up and tell them I can't get any ammunition, I can't get them, you're out of your mind. You go back and tell the general that I'll give him the truck when I get my truck.
Yeah.
When I ain't giving up nothing. He says, well, you're going against it. I said, put him, tell him, come up and tell me to give up the truck. And I want him to go up and see my battalion commander and tell him what he's doing. I said, you just tell him that. I gave my name and everything else, but I wasn't going to give it up. Yeah. No way. And this was a thing that I ran into almost every day.
Yeah.
We took the truck down to the thing. As soon as they saw the truck, they didn't want to get it. And they, no way. For a while, I had to go with them. And that truck really saved my seat. Mm-hmm. And the battalions, because they got everything on time.
You said something about, I can't remember, this is where I think I got this thing garbled. Maybe I got the two stories mixed up, but there was occasion where you said that I may have this, you told me the story about you always check with him before, you know, what does he need, what do you, you know, I'll bring it up, and you tell me that story. And then this is where I'm a little confused. It says here, in only one instance had Colonel O'Brien gotten angry at him.
Yeah.
And I thought, and then it said, on this occasion, Albanese had found a Jap truck. Perfectly new with new tires, leaking gas. A mechanic fixed the gasoline leak and he loaded with gas and weapons and led the truck with some men to meet the colonel at a designated point on the map.
That That was another time.
Okay, I got it mixed up.
Yeah, you got that dovetailed into another story.
Okay, that's what I said.
What we did was we found the truck, he found what the problem was, and then we were all right, except that division, any MP would drive me nuts.
Right.
But I stuck to my guns, and eventually they laid off. So the one time when I checked with him, and after I did everything, got everything up there, and everybody was happy, they had all they needed.
Mm-hmm.
And where do you be tomorrow? What are you going to do? Well, I got orders, we got to move off, and so forth. I said, okay, I'll meet you on the map at this crossroad. I said, what time do you figure it'll take you? He said, well, I guess as soon as we get there, he says, we're going to dig in and set up a perimeter defense. Yeah. I said, okay, I'll be there on time. I may get there before you do. He said, I don't know. So he said, no, you won't be there before we. I said, okay. So we load up, and I have a detail on it. We got ammunition, we got guns, we got the rations, we got water, we got that medical supplies, anything that they needed, that the aides needed. I grabbed up bandages or anything that I could get that I knew could be useful if they needed it.
Right.
So we get up there with the jet truck, and we stop near a big tree, and right at the crossroads, no sign of O'Brien or the battalion. So I sit there, and I'm looking out, and I turn to the driver, and I said, do you get the feeling that we're being watched? He says, yeah, I do. So I said, okay, get those light machine guns. We had two light machine guns on there. Get some ammunition. One over there, one over here. You cover that much. There's two BARs. You take the middle area between the tree here and where the machine gun is, and get some cover. So and field of fire. You got a good field of fire, but get yourself dug in somewhere. I said we had no mortars or anything like that, and we kept one BAR back, and we had the rest of my rifles. I said, all right, break open one of those boxes and take bandoliers of ammunition out. I want you to load up. I want the machine guns with the belts in them, ready to go. And off in the distance, I could see movement around. But the Jap truck was sitting out front. The Japs thought it was enough for the day. That's the only reason they didn't fire on us.
Mm-hmm.
And we were there for, I would say, maybe 3/4 of an hour like that. We didn't move around or anything. But once they were dug in and I made the rounds looking, that they were all right, checked the fields of fire, and these kids were not machine gunners, and they weren't BAR men or anything else. But they could fire. They could fire the weapons. So if there's any question about it, I showed them how to do it. I showed them how to load it and what to do. So I'm sitting there waiting in the back of the truck, and finally behind me I see a helmet. And at first I thought it was a Jap, and I'm all set with a rifle of Makarov. And then he stood up, and he's got his rifle up, and I see the helmet, and I know it's us.
Mm-hmm.
And I hollered, "First Battalion!" And he said, "Yeah." I said, "The S4. What are you doing out there?" He said, "Well, we thought we'd fight the war." And a little while later, word passed back, and next thing, an old bank comes. "What the hell are you doing?" I said, "Hey, you said you'd be here." And he laughed like hell. He got the greatest kick out of that. I said, "You know, got to feed you and keep me in ammunition. I got to every once in a while do a little fighting." But I did have occasion to get caught between them with Japs and getting into firefights. And
yeah.
That one time I was delayed because of
that. Yeah.
But we weren't that much far behind them, maybe 2,000 yards or so, maybe a mile once in a while, mm-hmm. and sometimes next to them. But we made 23 moves.
Yeah.
And I was able to supply him and take care of everything, all of his needs up until the last night. And I'm to get back to that night, I told you the story about what he did to my relief.
Right, that was
yeah.
That was back.
In Saipan.
Was that on Saipan?
Yeah, no, not on Saipan. It was back in
before
Hawaii.
You went. It was Hawaii, yeah.
Up in Schofield yeah. Barracks on the range.
Yeah, I got that. Yeah.
And the minute he said, "Do you ever find out who did it?" I said, "You somehow." But well, I never thought of him. I had everybody else. Mm-hmm. I got into fights with them and everything else. I drove them crazy. But I had come up, and it's that spot on the first picture you showed me where the tank is, and he's sitting around there. That's where we were discussing things. We were all set. And I was then only maybe 1,000 yards behind him, because regiment came up too, and they were right there. And this was in Tana Bay Harbor, and they were all set up for the night.
Mm-hmm.
He gets ordered to regiment, and he says, "Stay here, Robbie." I go, "Okay, John, I'll stay." Or, well, I used to call him Obi. We didn't bother with the rank.
Well, I understand that. That's for good reason,
yeah.
too, I understand.
So, I stayed, and he came back. And one look at his face, I will never forget it. I know he fought about the movement, but they said he either do it or we leave it.
Okay. Let me just get this. That was the night of the, before the bunker.
Yeah.
Okay. And the photograph of him sitting there behind the oil tank, that was at Tana Peg Harbor, right? Was that
Tana Peg Harbor? That was Tana Peg Harbor, yeah.
Now, was that where he got the order to move up? I'm a little confused about that.
Yes. He didn't get it until after 5 o'clock at night. He was ordered back to regiment.
Right.
He only had to go a short distance. They were there. And he came back. And he said, "Do you get the staff around?" No. He says, "We got to move." And everybody says, "Move." He says, "Yes." He says, "They expect a major attack coming down. They think they can join up with, in the meantime, during the day, early part of the day, Imperial Marines landed on the beach and were coming down. They thought they would join a going to join the part of the Jap Army. They were right in front of the regimental CP.
Mm.
And we was firing canister, point blank range, point blank. The damn gun was sitting here and they were there.
Mm.
And when the thing would explode, the pellets would be flying back and hit you in the face and wipe out anything it hit, but it was going all over the place.
So that was
I will never forget, we were standing on a line, regimental headquarters, cooks, drivers, officers, anybody, shooting like mad. And I had a carbine, I'll never forget it. This Jap Marine was over 6 foot, and he had a rifle, and a Jap rifle and a bayonet was taller than O'Brien and me when you put it down. And I saw one time earlier. I said to myself, "I'm going to get anywhere near these little bastards unless I'm going to shoot them." That's all. But this guy's coming down, and he's all set, and I put two shots into him with the carbine, and he never faltered a step. He just kept coming. And I know the two shots in because I saw his body move.
Mm-hmm.
So I said to the kid next to me, put two shots in that bastard. He had an M1. And the kid swung around and bung bung and knocked him out. I took the carbine and I threw it into the China Sea. I grabbed an M1 from a dead soldier and I never let go of that damn thing until it was over.
Yeah.
But I had a 45 in here in the shoulder holster that I had gotten, and I made sure that that was always loaded. 8 rounds, one in the chamber and 7 in the clip.
Yeah.
So, and, but we had that prior to it.
Sorry, let me get the timing. So we're in the afternoon of the 6th. The Imperial Marines hit, come in.
They came in, and, no, it, well, it was after. It was the 7th they came in because O'Brien had already moved up there.
Okay.
And we were trying to, I'll get back to that.
Okay.
Stick to the other, where he came back from
right.
Regiment. He got the staff together and explained that this is what was happening. They expected an attack. They were going to move down through, right through there, because they felt that there was Japanese troops down in Tanapag Harbor. And the Marines, they understood the Marines had gotten in. They were all killed. We didn't even see them at that time. But when we did see them, we killed them off. But so he was ordered to move ahead.
Right.
Now, Tanapag Harbor was flat, and the rest, the 1st Battalion was here, dug in, perimeter defense. There was a hill that went up like that. And the 2nd Battalion was here, and the 3rd Battalion was up there, and there was some Marines up there, above them. And that's the way this, it was. It was kind of a, we were on a flat ground, and they were on the higher ground. So
let me just try, let me see if I, so you're, the beach is over here, right?
Yeah. We were on a beach.
Yeah, the beach is over here, is a few yards.
Yeah.
Wait, can you draw a little sketch? Can you sketch that? I'm not very good on it.
Okay. My glasses, see what the hell I'm doing. Italian, okay. They were strung out here. Maybe the 3rd Battalion was in reserve, I don't know. They wouldn't have put them in the free. I think they were.
I thought they were up.
Yeah, they were on a high, very high ground.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they could have in 3rd Battalion, I think it's up there, 3rd. Yeah. Hey, I'll give you an idea there. 1st Battalion on the beach area, and then the high ground. I give you give you an idea.
This is the night before.
Night of the sixth.
Night of the sixth.
Yeah.
Okay. And the morning of the seventh. Yeah.
Yeah. Because it all happened, I guess, around midnight of the sixth into the seventh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Forth.
I guess I thought that
sixth. What the hell? What was it?
July.
Yeah, what?
July.
Yeah. Okay. Well, he got the orders about between 5 and 6 o'clock. Five and six p.m.
Okay.
Yeah. So he got them all together, and he told them what it was. So I listened, and he turned to me and said, "Now," he says, "Albie, sir, everything is out." I said, "He had the company commanders there too." I said, "They've gotten their rations. So tomorrow night they got a full ration, they got all the ammunition they wanted, anything else they needed. Is there anything else that you company commanders think you need?" So nobody said anything. I had to give up a Jeep to D Company that I had. Told them what had to be done. They had to start digging up, picking up their stuff and moving. And it was starting to get a little dark. It would be dark by the time they got there. They were only going to go maybe 1,000 yards or so.
Where were they? I mean, south. Where were they at the time? Around there where that gas tank was at Tenape?
Yeah, they were. The battalion was dug in all around there.
Okay. So it's 1,000 yards from that.
From there, maybe 2,000 in that area. It wasn't far, but they wanted them further ahead.
Yeah.
So what happened was, after they got set, I stayed and I said, "Well, I'll go along with you." And he said, "No, I don't want you up there." He says, "You give me everything that is needed." He says, "It's going to be utter confusion. I don't want you up there." He says, "No, you stay where you are." I was right there.
Mm-hmm.
Right behind where they were...
dug in at the...
Yeah. So, I felt a little bad. "Well, if I'm up there, I'll have him." He says, "The confusion is going to be tough." He knew it. So, he said, "That's it." I said, "Okay, I'll stay in touch and... see how it goes." We never expected anything to happen. What happened? Well, during the night, of course, you couldn't stand up in that area where he was when he started out. You could not stand up. You had to crawl because the ammunition was coming in. On top of that, the 2nd Battalion and the 3rd and the Marines on top were firing down there. What the hell they were firing at? I don't know. I don't know how they could see. I don't know. But there was a lot of firing from the up in the hills down there. And they were hitting our own men.
Mm-hmm.
Plus the judge. Plus they were shooting up everything. They took a load of machine gun ammunition. They had mortar ammunition. They had rifle ammunition. So they were firing as often as they saw a target. The Japs were pushing the civilians. They were all licking up on sake ahead of them with poles and knives on strapped to the end of the thing, to the poles.
This was at nighttime on the 6th.
Yeah.
Dark.
Yeah, it's at dark. The action started after, I'd say, after 10 o'clock, 10 or 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, and it started progressively get worse and worse.
You say everybody was firing. The Japs were firing, the Marines were firing.
Yeah, everybody was firing.
You couldn't stand up.
Yeah, you couldn't stand up, no way. And I crawled over to the CP, the regimental CP, to get a hold of the regimental four, who was Purcell, to find out what he knew and how we were going to get supplies and so on and get transportation. I didn't have enough transportation. Well, I couldn't get any satisfaction out of them. So I crawled back to where my dump was. It was in a little depressed area, and got into a hole that some of the guys dug for me, and caught a Jap in the moonlight at the other end, and killed him with the 45 slug was in his pocket. Came out of his pocket, but I put in I fired about 8 rounds at him, and got him, one of them, or a couple of them, got him anyway.
And this is all the way back?
No, not too far back. I mean,
about 1,000 yards?
Yeah, 1,000 yards.
Behind where?
It was right near the regimental CP, was where all the regiment,
right.
The headquarters was. We were over on the other side of the road. And you still couldn't stand up.
Right.
So, next morning is when the Japanese Marines came in, and everybody went to defend the CP. We had it. After we got that straightened out, I got a hold of a tank, and I tried. I had a trailer load, a small trailer load of. Water, medical supplies, some ammunition, but they needed medical supplies. We didn't have much communication. That broke down, and the batteries went on them or something. And I got a hold of the tank, and he was going to take me up. I get in the tank with the tank commander, and we start up. Well, he won't go off the road because it's blocked here and there, and he felt that they were mine, and he didn't want to go off the road. And I'm arguing with him for, you got to take me up there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was ready to shoot him.
Yeah.
But he got an order from division to come back. So he said, I'm following the orders. I couldn't do anything about it. He was the commander of the tank. So he took me back. Almost to the dump, and told me take the damn trailer off, and I had a trailer and nothing to pull it with. So we got a hold of a truck from service company. Later on, I got a volunteer of 10 men. I could have had more, but I took 10. And we started up.
What time was spent in the
afternoon? This was late in the afternoon.
Late in the afternoon.
The action, everything was over by then. They were trying to find guys and everything else. I was very worked up because I wasn't there, and I felt that we could have been of some help, but I never realized how bad things were.
Yeah.
I mean, the battalion was whittled down to 250 men, I think. And I didn't get up there. I got into a fight at the first covert. There was a jeep with a bunch of guys in it, half of them dead and the other half wounded. We pushed that off the road, and we tried to get medics up there to take care of the men. In the meantime, we had Japs underneath throwing grenades. So I had a couple of grenades. I threw one. And the damn thing rolled back on the covert and went off and didn't hit anybody, thank goodness. And the next one, I went up there and crawled over to the edge of the culvert, pulled the pin, let the handle go, and counted one, two, three, and then I threw it. Mm-hmm. And the damn thing went off underneath. We didn't have any more, nothing out of them. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, they had gotten me in a leg. They were good. The guy threw it, it rolled under the Jeep and it exploded, and what was didn't go into the Jeep went into my thigh, between my knee and my hip. And I jumped up, stood up, and it started, blood started running out of it and all. And I didn't worry about it. I wasn't going to go anywhere anyway. But about a half an hour later, I couldn't move the leg. I was dragging it because it hit nerves or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
And the other S4, the 2nd Battalion, was there. And I told him, take care of my men and see if they could get up to the battalion. And we had cleared the road of the Jeep, so they were able to move. And they took me back in the Jeep that I was with. My driver had a big hunk of his, mm-hmm. his shoulder part ripped out from that one of the grenades. And he went in there, and then I went in. And hell, I went in to get a bandage. You know, I had a first aid packet on it mm-hmm. from my pouch. I put that on. Hell, they ripped my clothes off. They were shreds. They were no good. I ended up with my tin hat, a blanket, and my shoes and socks. That's all. And my wallet. My wallet I had in my helmet. And that's all. I had my bayonet, a knife that I made a knife out of a bayonet. And that's all I had. And they wouldn't let me back. Put me on a Jeep, and twice the priest started to give me
that's right.
Yeah, I said, Father, I'm all right. The guy's worse off to me. And the second one said, I'm going to give it to you anyway. So I went back, and there was no beds. So they plunked me outside of one of these mesh tents. And I was there for 2 days. And the only guy that paid any attention was the doctor. He'd come along and give me a Hershey bar. I said, when did you eat last? Finally, the second day, he says, what the hell's wrong with you? So I showed him the leg. He said, oh, let me look at it. Meantime, it was crusting up. The scabs were getting out.
Yeah.
He says, it's shrapnel. He says, I don't think it's in too deep, maybe one or two pieces. And he says, I'll get you a bed. Well, I said, okay. But I lay there. I used to see these guys go in white uniforms. And when they came out, they looked like they came out of a slaughterhouse. Yeah. They were blood from head to foot.
Yeah, it was awful.
But they did some job. They would package people to be shipped out. I mean, where they couldn't do any more for them. They like an arm, they put it in a cast and braced it and everything else, or in a chest.
Yeah.
Whole big things. And then they ship them out to the ships.
Hospital ship.
Yeah. Because they had to be operated on and put together and everything else. But, so I got into the Marines in there, and at first the Marines went and got me my chow and everything else. And General Ross and his aide would tour the hospital looking for men. The aide spotted me. And after that, I had to get my own food. As soon as this guy found out I was an officer, forget it. But I could hobble around. So I don't think I was in there more than 2 weeks. I came out.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't even in 2 weeks. I couldn't get any clothes. I had to go down. I begged the guy in the Marine Corps to give me two sets of fatigues. And I got fatigues, and I got a pair of shoes. And I had a helmet, and that's all I needed. I got underwear from the hospital, but they had no uniform, nothing. So I got it out of there. I go back up, and I walk into the CP, the regiment of CP, and I meet Jensen, who was the exec. Mm-hmm. And, how are you? I'm okay. What the hell? What's going on? I saw new officers. He said, oh, we have a new commander and Wynn. And,
yeah.
So, he comes along and he said, oh, this is Lieutenant Albany, the S4, the first time. So all the guy says to me, he looks at me, and he says, how are your supplies? Yeah. He says, well, I know they're okay, we'll keep them that way, he says. So he said to me. No, I didn't particularly like him from the first time. But
here's another part where I got a little confused in our telephone. Yeah. Let me get that straight. So, okay, I got that. Here you go. You go to Wynn and he says, how's the supplies?
Yeah.
And then you say, he said here, and I maybe have this, you took over Company A.
Yes. I went back to, I went back to the battalion four job. And I damn near drowned in the foxhole because somebody gave me a half a bottle of rye.
Okay.
And I finished it, and I was out of this world.
Mm-hmm.
And I was disgusted and everything else. I'm laying in the damn hole, and the rain is coming down, and it fills up. And some guy grabbed me by the head, got my head up on the top of the thing, because I had blubbered around in the air. Next thing I know, I think a day or so went by. I don't know just how long, but a little while went by, and I was put in command of B Company.
Oh, okay.
B was the first company I commanded, and I started to go out on a mop-up, looking for Japs and all.
Right.
And I'd hobble along. I was still hobbling, but I could get around. And then this one day, I come back. And the first sergeant says, we got a new company commander. I said, yeah? Oh. So he says, so Captain, there's the company commander, Lieutenant Albany. And meet this guy, I never know.
So Galati?
I forgot his name now. I don't know what it was. He was a captain. But he came with Wynn. Wynn brought in a whole group of guys. He brought in a battalion commander, and he brought in captains. He brought in majors, and he says, I've been assigned a company, I'm the company commander. So he says, well, where do I go? So he says, I don't know, but you get you go back to the regiment and see where you're going. So I said, well, I guess that's it. So I go back and I get a hold of Jensen again. I said, what the hell are they doing? You got empty companies around, you put this guy in B Company? When you gave me B Company, he says, take it easy, Albie, take it easy, Albie. Calm down. So they put me in command of, he got me in command of A Company.
Mm-hmm.
So I go into A Company. So I was with A Company through the rest of the mop-up on Saipan and down to Espirito Santos. Took them down on the boat, set up camp down there.
Mm-hmm.
Went out and started scrounging around. I ran into a guy that knew my father in the real estate business. He was a Jewish fellow, and he was a big guy in supplies, in anything. He reached into the drawer, brings out a watch, he says, here, the navigator's watch. I had mine shot off, I don't know what happened. And I said, well, Jesus, I'll sign for you. Forget it. Don't worry about it. So I had a watch. I got electric lights. No, I didn't get them for A Company. I got them for D Company. But Johnny Blue brought a generator from Saipan down with them. So they set it up, and they were able to put lights in the mess hall, in the day room, and in the first sergeant's tent. So. But and I'm getting ahead of myself. but I was able to get extra food here and there, mm-hmm. and from sheets from the the hospitals, you know.
This is on Espirito Santo? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I got a lot of stuff. And then Lou Ackerman come back. And Lou should never have come back. He was wounded across the back of the neck. I think you may have that story.
Mm-hmm.
In there. And but he was hanging around a battalion, and we had a new battalion commander, Miller.
Okay.
Didn't know him. He was all right, didn't bother me. So I kind of was concerned about Ackerman, and I said, so, hey Lou, you took this company through combat, I didn't. Why don't you come back here and tell the battalion commander you want your company back? He says, well, you got it. I said, well, look, there's two other companies in open, D Company and Headquarters Company.
Yeah.
I said, you want your company back, you tell them it's all right with me. I'll go and take another company. And you have a right to it. You only hang around here and you're not getting anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So he went and told him, and he called me and he says, I don't want you to lead a battalion. I said, I don't want to lead a battalion. Well, he says, I have headquarters company. Want that? And I said, no, you wouldn't want me. I don't read or write. I said, and I hate paperwork. But I said, I'll take D Company. I have experience in it. I went to heavy weapons training and company commander mm-hmm. training. So that's how I ended up with D Company. And I got to know this guy better in the Navy. He was good. He invited me to dinner and band. They used to eat, you know, top draw.
Mm-hmm.
And I got electrical wiring. I got sockets. And we wired up the tents, all of the tents. And when they came to hook up the electricity, I handed them the two wires. That's all they had to do was just hook into the power. I was the only company that had a complete electrical hookup. And all the wind was noticing these things.
Mm-hmm.
And they used to come down and stand in the latrine and when we trained in there and listen to the training and who was giving it and all, and what I did and all. And comes Thanksgiving, I had, in D Company they had bakers. And they used to bake at night and they'd be off in the daytime. And they made little rolls and cinnamon buns and everything else. I'd get the stuff from the Navy for any place I could. The Army, the hospital, and extra flour, pie ingredients, or sometimes whole pies. I'd be able to. We traded with the, when we were on Saipan, we gathered up all these hand grenades and defused them. We took the detonators out, put them in a fork of a tree and hit them and exploded them, dug out the picric acid out of the grenades, dumped it all out, put the things back in, and they were harmless. See? So I had a couple of boxes.
Souvenirs, you said?
Souvenirs.
Yeah.
A couple of boxes of those for trading. And I'd trade them off and get all kinds of things. And anything we needed. And the Navy loved it because they weren't getting anything.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was able to get all kinds of stuff. Things for light bulbs, the sockets, the wire, food, anything.
Hmm.
So we were doing pretty good. And what I had extra, I would spread with the in the battalion. I'd give it to the A Company, B Company, and C, you know, and whatever was extra. So we were doing all right. And then finally, one day, wind comes down, and he's watching the training. He calls me over and he says, I want to see you in my quarters at noon. So I said, yes, sir. Noon time, I went up in his quarters. He was there. He had just gone to the bathroom. He came along and said, well, I'm promoting you to captain. I said, hey, I waited 38 years.
Oh, yeah.
And then he said, I waited 17 years to get it. So I said, the drinks are on me, Colonel, tonight. He says, you bet they are, because he was a drinker.
Yeah.
So I was down there early, and he, sure enough, down he came, and he had about four on me, but I made it, and then we went up to Okinawa. Yeah. And I had D Company there with Miller, and I had no problem with him. We did the job we had to do, and he got hit, and when we were in front of Naha, we were on the front line for about 16 days, and we made two or three attempts to get up the hill at the Japs, but they had defensive positions that were, out of this world.
Is this Kakazu?
It was the ridge in front of Naha, or on the side of it, yeah. I don't know, I've forgotten the name of it now. Anyway, we kept throwing the mortar shells out in front of the units when they were moving up. When they got close, they'd tell me that we'd move it up to the... We fired 81 millimeter mortar. You could fire, I think it was 17... 38 or 1,739 yards or something like that. That was with the medium shell. The heavy shell couldn't go that far. Light shell could go that far. But he got hit. Then we were pulled out of line, and the Marines took over, and we went north on the mop-up. And we went to continue on in. And then I had one more clash with the Japs. I was going up this hill there, and I...
This is during the mop-up?
This is the mop-up, yeah, and we hit this hill. It was a water runoff from the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And I was up front, and I hollered down and said, "Hey, Sergeant Weisheit, I feel awful lonely up here," I said. He said, "Don't worry, we got you covered, Cap. So I stand there, there's a big boulder right here, and I had my .45 in my hand. Safety up. I turn around to go up there, and who's there but another big Jap. The only thing that saved my butt was he had the rifle slung. Mm. He had it slung. Well, I just cut loose. The 8 rounds went through him and the guy behind him and the guy, and went into the guy behind him. And they came up and they started firing. We must have killed about maybe 8 of them, so. And the rest of them went tearing back, and we went after them, shooting at them. We got some of them, probably. And that was the last combat I saw. But then we were there for a while. We were put up on a hill, and nice spot, and intense. And we were parked. And all of a sudden, they started... MacArthur finally decided to release the people who were over there. I had 118 points.
Mm-hmm.
And I had men with more points than that. I made 3 attempts to go. I turned my company over 3 times to my exec. Twice I came back, false alarm. The third time was for real.
Mm-hmm.
Orders came. So I turned it over to him, said goodbye to everybody, left my liquor there. We had a drink all the way around, and I threw a party. Everybody got something.
Mm-hmm.
Put it in a 5-gallon can with the ice and Coca-Cola. I had rum. I think I had 2 bottles of rum. And every man in the company got a drink.
Mm-hmm.
I said, "There's it right there." Yeah. And I said, "Okay, we share the liquor," because we were the only ones getting the liquor.
Yeah, to all the officers.
But by the time we got it, we got the shit.
Yeah.
You know. no name brand one. Nothing, never even, I mean, it was liquor, who cared?
Yeah.
I mean, so.
Somebody said they found a lot of Jap stuff, Jap.
Jap scotch was very good. Jap beer was excellent, but I never got any. And O'Brien always had Jap scotch. And when I come out, I say, you got any of that scotch, Obie? Jesus, you're going to drink me dry. I need it.
Yeah.
And he'd give me the bottle, and I'd get two or three belts out of it. He never had any beer, though. I mean, the beer went fast. It was good beer. Mm-hmm. But the Jap scotch was very good.
And you found it there on
Oh, yeah, they found it in places. Up in Tanapeg Harbor. I could have been a millionaire if I could have taken over this warehouse. Had all these rubber boats in it, each one of them with a motor. Outboard motor on the back of it for invasion purposes. Mm-hmm. And you could put eight men in the damn things, you know? Beautiful. Mm. But, what the hell am I going to do in the infantry with a boat? But,
smuggle the scotch out.
Yeah. It was an experience that you'll take to your grave.
Oh, yeah.
I know O'Brien would have been the regimental commander of the 105th. And he could have just as easily been the division commander. Because people never realized, and maybe he didn't even realize how good he was himself, but he had a way about him. He could get people to do things for him without the authority and everything else. Don't cross him up. Mm-hmm. Don't ever cross him up. And when he found this one guy was doing his job, he was lucky he didn't shoot.
Yeah.
I went up with him. And I tell you, he was mad. He was livid. I'd never seen him as mad. But he controlled himself. He was very good. But I thought the world of the guy, because he gave me a job to do, and he had faith in me that I could do it. That's it. When somebody has that kind of faith in you, if you're any kind of a person, you'll never let them down.
Yeah.
You can't. That's the way I'm made. I could never go up and say I couldn't get something. I stole many a bullet anywhere I could get it.
Right.
But I went up there with everything that was needed, as long as I could. Yeah. And I was heartbroken when I couldn't have been at least there.
Yeah.
What the hell I could have done any more than give out all the ammunition. I'd be there side by side with him. But that, I think, hurt more than anything. But when he was killed, he had a Jap Sabre in one hand and an MP-45, and he had to stand in the Jeep. And around him were a lot of bodies. But he was about the best commander I ever had in the Army, barring any of them.
Yeah, well, I I've talked to many people, and they certainly share that view, you know.
I did. And I was close to him.
Yeah.
And I knew that he liked me, and he had faith in me. And that meant an awful lot, because I was getting beat over the head in B Company, but I wouldn't give in.
Yeah.
And the guy knew, Hennessy knew that I knew what I was doing. He didn't want to let me go. But I finally said, the hell with this. Mm-hmm. And once I got over there, I kept after him until I said, get me the hell out of there.
Yeah.
I finally got to O'Brien. O'Brien said he had to have a four. And I was doing a job, and I was doing it to his satisfaction. So, and he was a battalion commander. So he got it. I got transferred out of there.
Yeah.
But it worked out all right. I was very fortunate. I had guys shot dead next to me. Why the hell they missed me, I don't know. Mm. You don't know.
So you came back, and then
Well, when what happened was I came back and I said, I'm not going to go to work. Get out of the Army, I want to stay in. And I couldn't stay in. I was on a demobilization order and I couldn't stay in. I went into the reserve. I went in with the 77th Division. And I had an interview and they said, well, what would you like to do? And I said, well, I feel like I should be on the staff. I ended up with D Company of 301st Infantry. Company commander. I was a captain. So I stayed that way, and then I ran into Harry Huggins. And he said, why don't you come up to the regiment? They're going to federalize it. And I thought about it, and then I talked to my wife, Helen, and she said, well, you want to do it? All right. I said, what happened was, I was on leave until the first of the year of 1946. And I started out three times to go to work, never made it. First time I ran into the guy I had as the mess sergeant in D Company in the city. That was a lost day.
Yeah.
We reminisced.
Yeah.
And I got into trouble when I got home.
Yeah.
Because I was bombed out. The next day, next time, I got up as far as the subway station and I couldn't put my foot on the platform to go up. I didn't want to go back there.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, that was middle of the week, finally I said, okay, I got to do it. I've got to do it. And the wife and I talked, and she says, you got to go back. Hey, you got to do it. So I went back.
You went back to the...
I went back to the bank. I worked in a bank.
Oh, okay.
And I was... I was like a manager, but I was an auditor too. I'd go in and take over a branch in safe deposit work. And within a half an hour, know whether the guy who was on vacation or was sick was following the regulations on billing and so on, and that he was keeping up and everything else. And then I'd make a report on the phone to the big guy, the vice president. But the money was lousy. Mm-hmm. Don't forget, after the war, things changed.
Yeah.
Tremendous. And I wasn't used to that. Mm-hmm. I come out of the Depression. And I started in the bank at $12.50 a week.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get a chance to go to college. The old man lost over $100,000. And he got me a job in the bank. He had some real estate. That's the only thing that saved the family. And it was rough.
Yeah.
I came home, I gave 10 bucks to my mother, and I lived on 2.5 bucks a week. Mm-hmm. And hell, if you had $5 on a Friday night, you were rich.
Yeah.
$5. Go to the movies, take a girl to the movies and yourself, and buy candy, at least two or three pieces of candy, and only spend a buck.
Mm-hmm.
35 cents for the movies, a nickel for the candy.
Yeah.
You come back to the local gin mill, beer was a dime, pizzas were 15 cents. And you still, if you had $5, you'd spend maybe two or three, you still had a buck. Then Saturday morning, if you didn't have a job or delivering orders or something, you would play football.
Mm-hmm.
At a half a buck, you'd bet the half a buck that your team would win. Touch football, then you'd have a buck.
Yeah.
And if you had enough money to get to work so you could borrow money from some of the guys, you were lucky. But I couldn't. I had one daughter who was 5 years old. She had to get used to me, I had to get used to her. And then she got pregnant again, finally. And I had another one on the way. And I was going nuts.
Yeah.
My father helped out. He had his apartment house in Jackson Heights. And I got an apartment for $35. About 20 bucks less than what he normally yeah. got from. I did the janitor work. I collected the garbage, I scrubbed the halls at night, and that's what I did, a banker in the daytime, a janitor at night. But that was the way it was,
yeah.
and we knew the value of a buck. And I just couldn't take it. And anyway, to go back to...
Did you go back into the reserve?
Yeah, sorry, I went in the reserve, then I met this guy. They were forming the National Guard, and they were going to federalize it. So I went up, and I went in as a munitions officer. And I didn't plan to stay in, I just planned to help them get organized. And I saw the colonel, and he was a new guy that took over, Disson his name was. And he accepted me. And I was with people that I knew and soldier with, and I was happy.
Yeah.
And I was getting a little extra money.
Yeah.
So that helped. And finally, one of the guys, it was a guy by the name of West, Charlie West, who was on the regimental staff. He worked for Time Inc. magazine. So he said, "Hey Frank, would you like to come work for Time Inc.?" He said, "I sure would." So he arranged for me to meet the personnel manager, who was an Air Force lieutenant colonel. He was a captain. By that time, I had gotten to be a major. And I had, was I a major? Yeah. Maybe not that fast. But I was in, I went to camp with them in 1947 after they were federalized. Mm-hmm. And I came back, next thing you know, I got service company. Blue moved up and took the full-time job. And I got service company. And then the next step was, I had service company for a while, and then as changes came in, what did I go for? Next thing. I became the S4 of the regiment.
This is the 77th, which is the division, is it 77th?
No, the 107th.
107th, this is after the war.
After the war, yeah.
Okay.
I became, I was transferred into 2nd Battalion as a 3. Mm-hmm. And before I knew it, I was the exec. No, yeah, I was the 3, and then the battalion commander somehow got out, and the exec moved up to the battalion. He was at school, and I had to act as battalion commander because I was the senior, and he dumped the battalion commander, and the other guy was at school. So I acted as battalion commander, then I became his exec. Mm-hmm. And then he come around 1960 or so, well, no, before then, maybe, yeah, 59, 60. What the hell happened then? He became the regimental commander when the other guy got out.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to him and I said, "Hey, I want to, he got a battalion and I became the S4 after I got on the exec slide. I became the S4 and I had that for quite a while, about 6 years, I think. And I'd get this outfit up to camp, and I'd get them back down, and I'd get them, you know, whatever the hell they had to be done.
Yeah.
And I had plenty of experience behind it. and
your system.
Yeah, he hasn't been drinking it.
He's going to pass out because he hasn't had any lunch.
I went to Stuart and I said, hey, I'm the senior.
Yeah.
I want a battalion. Meantime, they're changing the guard again. And this is about the third change. They dumped the third battalion. He became the commander of the regiment. The second battalion was out on the island, and the first battalion was in the army. So I wanted the first battalion, and I got it. And I commanded the battalion, and that went along. And then, as the next spot I went to was, I became the, we became an RC, we were an RCT, Regimental Combat Team, then we were a battle group, and where you had two, you had an executive officer, a lieutenant colonel, and you had a second lieutenant colonel as a second commander. Because battle group could be built up to anything you wanted. You could have three tank battalions, you could have four or five rifle battalions under your command, depending on the mission. And that lasted for a while. Then they made another change. And all of a sudden we became a second brigade. And that changed everything. And I moved up as the brigade executive. And occasionally I'd be the regimental commander if the guy, he wasn't there. And finally, when I was supposed to get the regiment.
Yeah, that's back where we started, yeah.
I finally got roped out and in 1968, for 31 years.
31 years. Roped out, I've heard that term.
Yeah. Well, I hit the age of 60.
Yeah, that's, you're out,
but
yeah.
I,